In this episode of The Future Fast, we are talking to Ina Steyn, Head of Resilience at APSA, about the skills gap in Africa and how important it's going to be to address that skills gap in the coming decade, but also more specifically, how important cybersecurity is going to be as a challenge, but also an opportunity to address that skills gap. Welcome, Ina.
Hi, Arthur. It's lovely joining you today.
Ina, today we want you to tell us more about your approach to addressing the skills gap in Africa and also how significant cybersecurity is in addressing the skills gap. Do you want to give us an overview to start with?
Arthur, I'd like to start where this sort of seed was planted with me. I was fortunate to attend the 2018 RSA conference in San Francisco. And when I arrived there, I was overwhelmed with 42,000 attendees at that conference. But it also struck me that most of the presenters and most of the attendees were male. So there were very limited females during that conference. I was also lucky enough to be introduced to Jane Franklin from the UK, which is a well-renowned speaker on cybersecurity and specifically the challenges that women face. And that sort of planted the seed. How can we address that across the African continent? Because we operate as APSA across the African continent and it brings a unique opportunity for us. And then we started with a program called at the time Women in Engineering Services, where we looked across our technology, cyber and risk portfolio and how we can get women more engaged to take up these roles within cybersecurity and technology. And that sort of was the start of this program, and we now in year three of that program, where we have currently 120 women on that program. So for me, that was an excellent way to get women to step up. We had Jane Franklin that gave us input from her perspective, obviously spanning a decade and longer in terms of the challenges she faced. And so we designed that program from the two cohorts. We got feedback. That was fed into our new program called Igniter, where we have 120 women going through that program.
Aside from simply redressing the gender imbalance, why is it important to have women trained in these areas?
Arthur, I'm going to try not to get too excited because I'm very passionate about this topic. But I mean, I have read so much research. But there are key elements of all of the research that made me very, very interested in this. So ISE brought out a really good study where they sort of said that only 24% of women make up the cybersecurity workforce. In Africa, we've got a 9% in that cybersecurity skills force. So there's a very real opportunity for us. In that same study, they also indicated that women hold more cybersecurity college and university degrees and certifications. And then also what struck me is that they predicted that in 2028, 75% of women will control the discretionary consumer spend worldwide. So that just all makes sense why we should push for this agenda. I think also important to note is that men and women are, by their very nature, wired differently. And I think the way we approach risk, the way we approach a problem, the way we manage tasks are very different. And if you look across the African continent, I mean, we are so entrepreneurial on this continent. Just looking at, you know, what happened with this pandemic and how people stepped up. So we are most probably one of the most diverse continents in the world. Can you imagine if we put all of that together in how we shape the future? What absolutely phenomenal outcomes we can achieve purely by tapping into the diversity that's at our disposal.
How then do you address the very real issue of patriarchy still ruling across the African continent, not just in traditional systems, but also in the corporate environment where the traditional leadership of large businesses is heavily male.
So Arthur, I started my career in banking way back in 1984 as a telex operator, so not many will know what that is. But I started right at the bottom of where you could possibly start in the bank. And as I progressed through my career, I mean, I grew up in an Afrikaans family where my mother never worked. She was responsible for running the household, raising the kids. So that was my background. So when I entered the workforce at the age of 18, that was my frame of reference. I go in to earn, but my primary responsibility is the family. So whenever there was a family emergency or the kids needed to be picked up from school, it was generally me that would do that. So, you know, and I think that's just, that was passed on from generation to generation because my grandmother also never worked. So when I entered the workforce, that was my frame of reference, that women won't really progress in a career because they have to choose between family and a career. And obviously, given my background, which most women sort of comes from the same background, will tell you that it would always come down to family first. I think, you know, my own experience in the workplace was also, you know, that when I entered meetings, it was male-dominated. Technology at the time was completely male-dominated. So I never even thought of pursuing a career in technology or risk at the time. And I think those are sort of the shackles that are still holding women back because it's passed on from one generation to the next, that these roles are very masculine and they are more orientated towards men. So that's not a career that you would generally pursue, but I think that has shifted significantly. If I look at some of the younger women that I currently coach and mentor, that sort of historic shackles is no longer that prominent in how they choose careers. Because they realize there's a lot of support, so I don't have to choose between a family and a career. I can successfully have both. And for me, that is such an incredible step forward, that those shackles are starting to break and women are pursuing these careers because they know there's a support system that allows them to have the best of both worlds.
I spoke at an APSA event a couple of years ago where I had the privilege of meeting the person who launched the APSA online banking system way back at the end of the last century, and that was a woman. It must have been very difficult at that time for people like her and yourself to really make an impact in this environment. What are the secrets to women thriving in a corporate environment, and particularly how they need to do it in the 2020s?
So Arthur, I was very fortunate to have really phenomenal women as coaches and mentors. And I also had a very prominent male that played a significant role. So, you know, advocacy and sponsorship goes a long way. And I've had that in abundance that pushed me. I always say you don't grow in your comfort zone. You only grow outside of that comfort zone. But I think for women specifically, we are more sort of cautious to step outside of that comfort zone where we will really grow and expose ourselves. So I think I had a coach that really pushed me. I mean, every meeting that I had, she would set up a coffee session with me and give me the feedback, really honestly, openly saying, this is what your body language said. This is where you sort of paused, where you shouldn't. You should have been more forthcoming. You know, you should come across more confident. And I mean, it was a journey of note, but it was so worth it. And I use that to instill in everybody that I coach and mentor that I think generally women, when we apply for positions, et cetera, as well, we want to make sure we are 100% ready for that role. So we may not necessarily apply for a role where we feel we're not 100%, you know, sort of got the skills and the education around that, where men, on the other hand, are more bolder. Even if they're 60% ready for a role, they will apply for the role, succeed at it, and actually be very successful in it. And I think those are sort of the things that, you know, help when you've got a role model, you've got a coach, a mentor. And then I don't only speak about female role models. I think men have got such an important role to play to pull women into that environment, to welcome them, to be an advocate for them, and to sponsor them, to make them feel comfortable in that role.
Well, here's a message to men. Women have to prove themselves twice over, and men should stop having that mindset that they should prove themselves both in their role and as women in a men's world, because the 2020s won't be a men's world, certainly if you have your way, Ina.
Definitely, Arthur. So, you know what, I think about these stuff a lot when I can't sleep, like 3 o'clock in the morning, sort of. I think about these things. And when I read the study that says in 2028, women will control 75% of discretionary consumer spend. I mean, that opportunity right there, and the way that we are moving to towards technology. I mean, if you look what happened during the pandemic, I mean, I don't think that shopping malls will feature that prominently in our future. Just the convenience of online shopping. But I think if we as women are going to do the online shopping, whether that's the grocery shopping for the household, etc., we want to know that it's safe. And how better to instill that message if you've got this abundance of women that's crafting that future in how we roll out technology? What is important for women when they actually shop online, whether that's for high-end products or whether that is just, you know, basic household goods, etc., then it makes absolutely sense to have women as part and parcel of how we craft those strategies when we want to move technology forward.
But beyond women being there simply as women or to redress the balance, I presume that you're seeing a role for women in various spheres in the future that will benefit from diversity. Can you just elaborate a little on that?
So, Arthur, absolutely. It's not just in cybersecurity where we see a lack of women featuring in senior roles, etc. Even if you just look at the F500 companies, if you look at leaders across the world, this perpetuates itself in various industries, in governments, etc. And I think, you know, the more role models we get into those, and the more we get involved at a grassroots level, getting young women interested in this, we can create a future that is absolutely safe, secure, where people don't have to go out of their home to buy any goods or anything like that. They can really live safely online and be comfortable that how that is put together has had a diverse amount of input in how that is crafted to cater for the various markets where women make a lot of decisions, specifically in households. And those are the sort of target audience that you want to cater for if you look at the future and how we want to fast track technology. Even at a schools level, I mean, during the pandemic, children had to learn online and it may have been new to some. So I think the future is definitely at a pace that we've never seen before. It's been catapulted by the pandemic. And I think the youth has got an important role to play in how we craft that future, where people feel safe to actually transact online, to purchase online, to communicate online, like we do now. So I think there is just, you know, the more diversity there is in how we craft that future, the better the outcome is going to be.
You used two important words that will have a big impact on the skills gap and the skills opportunity of the 2020s, and that is youth and grassroots. Now, when I chat with any young person who's looking at how they should shape their career and what choices they should make, I usually suggest, depending on where they're going, but I usually suggest that they need to look at a career where they can build in the technologies underlying the fourth industrial revolution. Now that's a cliche, but there are some of those technologies that are critical to this future. And I think specifically of artificial intelligence. So people in a privileged environment are being exposed to that idea. They're being told by people like yourself, yes, embrace artificial intelligence as part of your career, whether you're going to be an engineer, a lawyer, or involved in a self-driving environment. All of those are going to be heavily driven by artificial intelligence. But when you look at the grassroots environment across the African continent, that term is completely alien. The idea of someone encouraging you to look for a career in artificial intelligence is alien. So how do we bring that kind of understanding of the opportunity to the grassroots across the youth of this continent?
Arthur, and I think poverty plays a big role in that. So if the youth don't have access to technology to explore it, or don't have financial support to actually go and study in those fields, then they won't know that. And I think we realize that from an APSA perspective. You know, our chief security officer, Sandro Bucchioneri, that grew up on the Cape Flats, and he always had this vision. Although he worked on multiple continents around the world, he always had this vision to come back to Africa and establish a cybersecurity academy, which he's done over the last 3 years in partnership with our HR director, Bahia Sali. And that academy, in partnership with the Maharishi Institute, take children from marginalized families and put them through this academy, giving them the opportunity to be exposed to that type of technology and to give them that support. I think if you look across the African continent, we are unique in terms of the demographics and the sort of challenges that we face. So we've got a lot of marginalized kids, specifically on the Cape Flats, that after school are just on the streets. And the idea of the academy is to take those children off the streets and put them through this academy, get them interested, and then also help them in the job market once they graduate from the academy to find a meaningful job. Now, if we can multiply that across the continent, there's such a huge opportunity to get more and more of the youth involved in how we craft the future. I mean, they're not necessarily going to be part of crafting a future if they don't even know what technology is, how a normal iPad functions, let alone what artificial intelligence is and what the possibilities is around that. So I think from just looking across the continent, if we can partner between private, public sector and the educational sector to get children off the streets, get them interested in technology and cybersecurity, we will make great strides in creating a future workforce that is savvy enough to craft these sort of technological breakthroughs that we are looking for to take us into the next decade.
So give us an idea then of what the size is of that job opportunity. How big is the skills gap? How many jobs are waiting in? To start with cybersecurity, I understand that there's about a 3.5 million personnel shortage across the world in that field. How big is that shortage in Africa, and is that an opportunity? And then also beyond cybersecurity, cloud computing, which is exploding fast, and then ultimately at, let's call it, the high end of the jobs market in artificial intelligence. Can you size that for us or give us a sense of the scope of it?
So Arthur, in Africa alone, we've only got 9% of the workforce that's in a cybersecurity role. Now, 9% is one of the lowest across the continent or across the globe when it comes to cybersecurity. So if you look at the current youth that we have and the average age of the youth in Africa, we also got the youngest generation or youngest population of youth. If you weigh that up and put it into context, 3.5 million job skills across the globe, only 9% representation in that industry across the African continent. The opportunity is something that we just cannot miss at this point in time. I don't have the exact figures on cloud, etc., but I presume it would be very similar given the sort of challenges that we face on the African continent with the youth not having access to technology, etc., then I assume it won't be any different when you look at any of the categories across technology.
So on the one side, there you have the youth desperate for jobs. There you have all these jobs waiting, millions of jobs in these different fields waiting. But in between, there's that gap. And obviously your initiative is one way of filling that gap. But it's not enough to have these piecemeal efforts happening here, happening there. Is there a way to bring together all these initiatives, but also to expand and explode these initiatives across the continent?
So Arthur, I know that between Bahia and Sandro, they are engaging with some of the government structures to see how we can partner with them. Obviously, you know, also looking Sandro reaching out to his peers to say, you know, start something similar, etc. Because I think the outcomes and the successes that we see from the academy already speaks volumes in terms of what can be achieved. But it can't be done in isolation with one company, without the partnership of the private or public sector and the government and the educational sectors. I think, you know, there has to be a collaborative effort across those sectors, across the continent, to really put a meaningful effort behind this to make a real impact, as opposed to the piecemeals like you mentioned. So I think there's just such a huge opportunity when you go to schools, for example, and you've got a really good role model that speaks to those children to get them interested, and then partnering with the educational sector to see how do we get these children, because obviously the majority of our youth don't have the financial support to go to universities. And I think that's where the partnership between private, public, educational and government sectors can play such an important role to open the doors for those children that really has the ambition to make a career, whether it's technology or cybersecurity, but that they are supported in actually going that route. Because it's one thing having a dream to have those, but you don't have the means to get there. And I think that's what we need to unlock, is how do we provide that means for young children to actually go that route.
You've actually made a great suggestion for us as well, to bring role models to the fore. And we're going to commit ourselves on the Future Fast to put some of those potential role models on this platform and get that message out. And I hope that we'll be able to integrate that with initiatives like yours to make the skills available, or at least to give people an opportunity to understand what skills are available and what opportunities are available to match to those skills in the near future. What is your intention of what you will be doing next on a personal level and from an APSA point of view?
So Arthur, you just made my heart smile. So thank you for that. I think, you know, role models play such an important role. So in my coaching and mentoring of some of the number of young women across the organization, the one thing they always say to me is that when you have an aspiration, but you look up in the structures, whether it's the organizations, whether it's government, and you don't see somebody like you, it sort of dampens your aspiration to say, but if women before me have not been successful, why would I be different? And I think those role models, those women that have broken down the barriers, that overcame the hurdles, that were the trailblazers, those are the women that you really want to put in front of the youth to tell their story, like Jane Franklin did. I mean, her book Insecurity has a lot of examples of how she overcame that. And I think once you have a role model that talks from a really personal experience how they overcame that, you associate with that, and then your aspirations becomes more of a reality than just a pipe dream. So from my perspective, as part of the Women in Engineering Services, now called Igniter program, we also have a coaching and mentoring leg to that. So once these ladies graduate from that program, they have access to a number of phenomenal women in the organization as role models, as coaches, as mentors to help and guide them. Part of the program is also that we give them a challenge to say, here's five sort of issues that the organization is currently grappling with. You are divided into groups of five. You're going to go and explore how you will address this specific problem. And they allocated a senior sponsor to help them drive that project. So it also gives them a sort of practical experience, how they can start with ideation and how they put that into a project that we can actually implement in the organization, and they can see the benefits realized from that.
Ina, thank you. Thank you for an inspiring conversation.
Arthur, you're so welcome. I want to leave you with a very personal story. You know, we talk about the gender imbalance, and there's no, you know, right or wrong in this. And the one thing that my grandmother taught me is that, you know, they stayed healthy because they ate a balanced diet. So everything for them was in moderation and in balance. And I think that sort of stuck with me in everything that I do. So I think there is something to be said that there has to be a balance between the males, the females. So if you really think about it, the study shows women have more degrees and certifications in cybersecurity. And when you look at the males, they obviously, because they dominated for so long, have the experience. So if you put the two together, can you imagine what we can craft for the future if we do that? Thank you, Arthur.
What a great combination. Thank you very much.